everybody. This is Bob Boland talking about the college campus report with our own guru, Wes Bunting, for all things personnel. We were set to talk today about Louisville, and Louisville has kind of messed us up or beat us to the punch by hiring Charlie Strong as their head coach. We're still going to talk about them and their search and where their program is headed, and we'll talk a little bit later about the vacancy that's come up at Kansas with the resignation of Mark Mangino. There are a number of candidates there, and a lot are being talked about, but there are some challenges at Kansas. So, Wes, let me bring you in. What do you think about the Louisville program and where it's been and where it's going?
Well, right now, especially when evaluating talent this year, they're one of the easiest scouting reports to write up, Bob, to be honest, because they only have two or three guys, seniors, with any kind of a name, with any kind of potential. And even then, I didn't grade them out very highly as NFL prospects. The top one I looked at this year was John Dempsey, a 6-foot, 240-pound inside linebacker. Decent athlete, but honestly, he's nothing but a camp body. The same with Richard Ragland, the free safety there. Their most talented player is probably Cameron Graham, a junior tight end, 6'4", 250 pounds. I could see him going sometime late in the draft next year. And they have a pair of talented offensive tackles, Joe Avinger and Jeff Adams, both big 6'7", 300 pounders. But honestly, this is a pretty bare cupboard. And for Charlie Strong to walk into this, he's not going to have anywhere near the type of talent he had at Florida. And honestly, Bob, if some of those second, third string guys would come over from Florida, they'd be starting right away at Louisville.
Well, that has happened in the past at certain programs. Jim Donnan, strangely enough, brought talent from Marshall to Georgia with him when he went. So it isn't unheard of for a coach to bring some talent with him, although Florida has a tremendous amount of young talent. And Strong has done very well with it. I mean, I think we're all sort of the idea that Charlie Strong was overdue in getting a head coaching position just on what he's accomplished on the field, whether at Notre Dame, South Carolina, or at Florida as a defensive coordinator or defensive line coach. He is a very aggressive, well-thought-of coach. He's a former winner of the Frank Broyles Award as the top assistant coach in the nation. But it's really interesting to ask the question here. He's a guy with no head coaching experience. He's never recruited on the turf that Louisville kind of needs to succeed. Do you see him having success at Louisville recruiting from the Deep South?
Honestly, Bob, absolutely not. And I heard a good story a couple years ago and involved a Florida running back, an all-state potential All-American in Florida named Yvenson Bernard. And this guy, I think he came out 2 years ago in the NFL draft, and he went to Oregon State, an undersized guy, but very productive at Oregon State, one of the best backs in the Pac-10. And everyone questioned, why didn't a team like Miami, why didn't a team like Florida State, even South Florida or Central Florida, why didn't they recruit a guy like Bernard? And everyone said, well, because the guy can't run. Sure enough, he goes to the NFL Combine, runs 4.8, and everyone says, you know, he can't run. If you can't run in Florida, they don't want you. That's the only reason big-time recruits leave Florida, is because they can't run and none of the major programs want you. So I can't see Strong going into the South, going into Florida with a Louisville patch on his sweater saying, come to Louisville, boys, when there's all these teams, especially like I talked about, the Florida Internationals and all the smaller Florida schools coming up, competing with the bigger South Floridas, the Miamis, the Florida States. There's no way any of the recruits decide to leave their home state of Florida to go to Louisville with him.
Charlie Strong has certainly taken on a big challenge, and I think you say it incredibly well there, Wes. One of the most interesting things when you think about the rise of Louisville football in the 1980s, 90s, and early part of the 2000s is the names you associate with coaches there are all pretty extraordinary names. Obviously, Howard Schnellenberger is the first name you think about in connection with Louisville and the surprise win he got a number of years ago in the Fiesta Bowl against Alabama. But he was succeeded by John L. Smith, who did a very nice job. He was succeeded by Bobby Petrino, who's done a very nice job at Arkansas, who our own Mike Lombardi tried to hire with the Raiders, kind of without even really knowing him. And one of the hallmarks of the offenses there is they got such great play out of the quarterback position. And I think that was what Michael Lombardi always used to say about Petrino and why he thought so highly of him as a coach, notwithstanding his little dive out of Atlanta, was how well those quarterbacks played. And when you think about them, none of them really have ever made anything of themselves in the NFL, whether it was Dave Regron, Stephen LaFleurs, or even Brian Brohm.
Yeah, that's a big concern, especially when you look at the Louisville program, and that's one of the reasons why I questioned the hire of Charlie Strong, bringing in a defensive guy who had all the talent in the world at Florida. And you've said in the past, Bob, how he might be a bit overdue for a head coaching job, but we're really going to see him tested from an X's and O's standpoint, from a schematic standpoint. Can he game plan with the lacking talent they have at Louisville right now? Honestly, I don't think he's the correct hire. I don't think a defensive mind is what they need in Louisville right now. So I'm going to throw this question back to you. What were some of the factors that you think went into this Louisville job, trying to find the right head coach? And do you think that Charlie Strong was the right guy there?
Well, he's certainly the hot coach of the moment, given what he's accomplished at Florida. And as I said, he's probably been overdue for this job. The rep on him in the past was he had not been a strong interview in some of the prior jobs he'd gone for. But Wes, there's a very decided trend out there in college football, and when it happens three times and maybe four times, you really begin to see it, and it is the fourth time that this has happened. We see a young African-American assistant coach with limited or no head coaching experience. Strong has none, but before that, Willie Taggart at Western Kentucky, Larry Porter at Memphis, and Mike London at Virginia just a couple days ago all get hired, being the first really primary interview. The teams have locked on these candidates. They're all African-American candidates, mostly with some ties to the school. Strong didn't have any particularly. But it seems to be there's a decided trend this year in college football to looking at minority candidates. Now, that's a good thing, because I think we can all recognize that universities, even though they've claimed to be bastions of liberalism, or in many cases are, have done a very poor job in identifying and promoting and moving on African-American candidates. But there seem to be three factors really at work on why the African-American candidates have done so well this year, and why there's such a departure from hiring proven college head coaches at these jobs. And I think Louisville, which is a attractive job in many ways, given the resources they have in the program, and Virginia, which might even be more attractive given their resources and their potential and the talent base that they play on, all seem to lock on one assistant or one coach and never really move off. I've never heard other names mentioned in connection with it. No sources told me that other people had even completed interviews. So there seems to be a couple of factors. The first one is that there is a real push from the university putting pressure on its athletic department to abide by its own equal opportunity employment rules. So a lot of these schools have interviewed the African-American candidate or the minority candidate first, and they've never moved on from that. They're impressed and actually take the deal. So that's one factor. The other factor is that, and it may be a little more subtle, is that a lot of times if you're promoting an assistant, particularly an African-American assistant who has no prior head coaching experience, and you're the only school looking at him, he doesn't really have a lot of leverage in the salary negotiation. Charlie Strong's will probably be getting something in the neighborhood of $2 million, but it's not what John Gruden would have asked for from Louisville if they were successful in chasing him. It's not what even a Tommy Tuberville would have probably demanded from Louisville, or a Phil Fulmer would have demanded if they were going to be serious candidates. So in a way, if you get somebody who's not in demand, who's not the first choice of a lot of people, they don't have a lot of market power and they'll work cheaper. And that's not insignificant if you're saving $500,000 or more dollars a year off coaching salary. The final factor is this, and I've kind of gone on a long time about this, is that the NCAA has done a nice job in the absence of a Rooney rule that requires you to interview, but they've done a very nice job in creating forums for athletic directors to examine and see African-American coaches at a variety of different levels in their career. They have a forum for coaches called the Coaches Academy, which is for coaches with 3 to 8 years experience who are minority coaches. And they have a thing called the Expert Coaches Forum, which is one of the things that allows athletic directors to meet minority candidates. This Expert Coaches Forum has gotten at least 5 minority candidates hired as head coaches in college athletics in the last year. And it seems to be working incredibly well for athletic directors to both meet and become impressed by African-American candidates. So I don't know which of the factors are at work, or it's a combination of them, but they all seem to be creating a perfect storm for hiring African-American assistants right now.
That's great stuff, Bob. And when you bring up the two names that really stand out to me right now, Tommy Tuberville and Phil Fulmer, two guys who have both been successful in the SEC. Sure, they stumbled across tough times at the end of their career, but we can both agree that these have been successful coaches in the SEC. one, why aren't these guys getting enough looks at a place like Louisville? And is the Louisville administration, are they doing their do so and their homework needed to, in hiring the right coach?
I think this is, I don't want to speak to Tom Jurich, who I think was under a great deal of pressure on this hire, because I think he is in some, he needs to pull off a bit of a miracle in Louisville to get his football program back up, particularly after Rick Pitino has made his basketball program a little hotter with his off-season antics. Short of making Tiger Woods the golf coach would be the next challenge. But the interesting part here would be, I think athletic directors are a little afraid of them. They come with a lot of, they come with some baggage, and I think there is some perception that they also come with a pretty hefty salary demand. So I think there's a little concern there. The other thing I think is interesting is why aren't athletic directors looking more deeply at the pool of candidates? And two names that keep coming to mind who look like they may not have an opportunity this year, again, are Bud Foster and Mark Whipple, who are both high-level assistant coaches who would seem to be almost no-brainer choices, and they seem not to be winning or even getting to the final round on this case. So it seems like some piles are being ignored, piles of talented people. And one of the things I think we learned in looking at the minority hires, when they were excluded, you found talented individuals were not getting jobs, and there was a lot of talent there. I think when you're copycatting a trend, though, where everybody's looking for a minority assistant, now, again, they haven't gotten a tremendous amount of opportunity, so there's still probably some talent in that pool. But I think anytime you take a run at a talent pool, you're beginning to exhaust it by the third or fourth hire. So I would have some concern about that. But I would generally say, in answer to your question, which I know I've, again, gone on a little long with, but I think universities have become lazy this year. They're afraid of agents. They don't want to meet tough demands of a Neil Cornrich or a Jimmy Sexton. And they really are looking for guys who they can have a little bit more control of in the interview process. So it definitely is the year of the minority assistant.
Well, you ready to get on to Kansas, Bob?
I think we're ready to move on to Kansas. And Kansas is an interesting hire because the first thing about Kansas that we got to notice is that Mark Mangino is the first coach to leave Lawrence, in this case sort of by his own choice, but kind of not. He resigned with a settlement when the university was threatening to move for cause termination against him. But he's the first coach to leave Lawrence with a winning career record since Jules V. Sykes resigned in 1953. Now, I don't know who Jules V. Sykes is, but it's been a long time since 1953, and it's a name that just kind of pops out at you as a lot of coaches have gone to Kansas and not succeeded, whether it's Mike Gottfried or Pepper Rogers or even Glenn Mason, all left under 500. So the Kansas job is a tough job. What do you think of their talent, Wes?
Honestly, Bob, this is up and down, and it's been, to say the least, a bit more in the last couple years. But when you look back at past drafts, in 2003, they don't have a guy taken. 2004, one pick, an offensive tackle, Adrian Jones. 2005, one pick, David McMillan in the fifth round. 2006 and 2007, no picks. They had their hotbed in 2008 with Aqib Talib in the first round, Anthony Collins in the fourth round, the year they went to the Orange Bowl. Last year, no picks taken in the entire draft. This year, it's a little bit better. Still not as talented as their 2008 year, but they have a guy named Desmond Briscoe, a junior wideout, 6'3", 200 pounds, goes up and attacks the football well, a pretty good route runner. He'll probably be the first prospect off the board for the Jayhawks this year. Maybe a first-round guy, more likely a second-rounder. Darrell Stuckey's a talented strong safety in this pretty weak strong safety class. You can see him going probably somewhere on the first day. But then you have guys like Todd Reesing, Jake Sharp, Kerry Meyer, overrated prospects. These guys aren't, you know, your typical guys. Todd Reesing is a 5'10 quarterback. Jake Sharp, a 5'9", 190-pound running back. Kerry Meyer, former quarterback who made the transition to wide receiver. And at Kansas, they don't get the five-star recruits, Bob. They don't get the four, the three. They get the throw-in guys that they have to be creative and maximize their potential at the college game. Does it work out well for the program? Absolutely not. But this is what they get at Texas, and these are all fringe guys, probably going to make more of a living playing football in the CFL than any chance they'll have in the NFL. But they have two guys in Briscoe and as well as Stuckey, who have a chance to get drafted this year.
very illuminating, especially because when we start to look at Mark Mangino, we're always sort of amazed by his kind of angry demeanor and maybe not so pretty demeanor. But it seems like based on the lack of talent and the creative way they've used guys like Reising and some of the other recruits that they've gotten out of Texas or out of the Kansas JUCOs, that they've done a pretty nice job there.
Yeah, absolutely. And like we said, you know, Kansas, they're not getting a top five quarterback out of the state of Texas any year. They're getting the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th guy. And when you look at Todd Reising, sure, he was probably an all-state guy in Texas, but at 5'10", there's not too many 1A programs that are interested in a quarterback that's 5'10", with a candy arm. Sure, he's athletic, but he's not going to be able to get the ball down the field. And we've seen their offense, you know, that spread offense that they like to run, could be efficient with the quarterback, get the ball out of their hands quickly, and I think they need to stay with that spread offense. We talk all the time about Rich Rodriguez and how the spread's kind of taken away from the luster at Michigan because they have the talent to beat teams straight up. Kansas doesn't have that talent. They need to be in a spread offense where they can trick, they can get the ball out of the hands quickly because they don't have the linemen to block defenders up front, and they need to be creative with their offense. So I think that spread is the ideal fit that they need in a future coach now to replace Mangino.
Well, the first name that has come up in connection with the Kansas job, and it is another African-American coach, this time with some head coaching experience and a little bit of track record of success. That's Turner Gill, the former Nebraska star quarterback and Buffalo coach. But Gill doesn't fit that offensive scheme, does he?
No, he doesn't, but he's a creative offensive mind, and he has experience in the Big 12. Sure, he doesn't have that wide-open spread offense where you can get the running back in space and let him create, but I think he has the intelligence and the know-how to adjust, and I think he can realize his potential at Kansas, and I think he'd have the ability to adjust, find guys that would fit his offense, bring in guys that know, you know, the spread offense a little better than he does. And I think what they need more so is a leader from their head coaching job. And I think with the amount of JUCO guys, with the second-tier recruits, the recruits from bad backgrounds, they need a coach with leadership capabilities that these players want to play for. And especially after some of the racial remarks that came out about Mangino, I think an African-American coach would be a great fit at Kansas right now, and Turner Gill would definitely be one of the top hires.
Well, that's a really interesting point, that Gill, the leader, and Gill, the former Big 8, now Big 12 hero, actually does fit there better than he had at some of the other jobs that where people were demanding that he be hired and looked at. So that kind of works. Another name that was associated with it, although it has been shot down, although things that are shot down often come back, is an interesting name, although I can't imagine why he would consider leaving Mississippi to go to Kansas, was Houston Nutt. What do you think of Houston as a coach?
Yeah, you know, Houston's wild. He really is. You never know. I mean, the guy has so much talent at Ole Miss, and every year he finds a way, and at Arkansas the same, and every year he finds a way to beat LSU, he'll find a way to beat Florida, but yet he can't get his team up motivated to beat a team like a Vanderbilt or Kentucky or a lower team in the SEC. They always, you know, end up losing some kind of game along the way that ends up killing their chances. And I question Houston Nutt from a motivational standpoint, being able to game plan and beat the teams he's always supposed to beat. One guy that's come up to me in recent days when doing some research on this is Kevin Sumlin, the head coach at Houston. This is another guy we know about Houston, Case Keenum, throw the football all over the place. He's a guy that can maximize talent, doesn't have the elite stars all over that Houston offense yet. They're leading the nation right now in passing yards. I think they're top five in completions, but he would make a lot of sense. Another motivational guy, can be creative with his schemes, an African-American who can relate to some of these prospects, and I think he would be a pretty good fit at Kansas.
I think the one downside on Sumlin, and this is a job that really fits him, unlike Notre Dame where he's been mentioned or other places where he's been mentioned, I think, exclusively as a minority interview candidate, I think at Kansas there is a real plus for him. The only problem I see is that he follows Mangino as one of the former Oklahoma offensive coordinators, and he too sort of falls off that Hayden Fry, Bob Stoops tree. So maybe Kansas would be a little reluctant to go back to the same tree after kicking Mangino out. The obvious name that's been mentioned in connection, because a lot of the things we look at for athletic directors is they often go back to the future and hire someone they've hired before, is Connecticut's Randy Edsall. I'm not so sure that Edsall makes a lot of sense for this job, in part because Edsel's really never coached on this turf. He has no experience in Texas. He has no experience in the Kansas JUCOs particularly. He's always been sort of a Northeast Midwest coach. So while I know Lou Perkins, the athletic director, thinks highly of Edsel, and he's been a good choice and he's done a nice job at Connecticut, although in fairness, he took over a program that Skip Holtz had built up pretty high at the 1AA level, I'm not sure that Edsel's a great fit. What do you think there, Wes?
No, I agree. I don't think he's a great fit either from a schematic standpoint, from a recruiting standpoint. I just don't see him coming in, being able to relate to the players and the style of offense that he has. Likes to run the football, and I like that. You need to run the football in the Big 12, but Connecticut and Kansas are two different places, and that's a tough place to recruit out there, especially when he has no experience at all. He's used to, you know, he does maximize talent at Connecticut. He's been able to find guys. He's not going off the Tom Lenning, the top five-star prospects. He does his own film study. He's able to evaluate talent. But going in and trying to find guys in Texas, where every team in the Big 12 goes into Texas and tries to bang it out and pick up the top players, I think it'd really take him some time to get used to what he has to do, recruiting in Texas, being new to that place. I just think it's two different worlds out there, and he'd kind of get lost up in the middle of it.
I think that's a very good point, and I actually think that that's one of the best points in the difference between college football coaching and college basketball coaching. Because the number of players you have to recruit in basketball is relatively small and you recruit them on a relatively national basis, it's much easier for a college basketball coach to move intersectionally than it is for a college football coach to move intersectionally. And obviously Lou Perkins, who is from Iowa, the athletic director, but came to Kansas from the University of Connecticut, where he was a successful athletic director, may not have fully realized that difference, having hired and replaced a number of successful basketball coaches over the years. He may find the trick of replacing a football coach, even one he may not have liked particularly, but one who was inarguably pretty successful there, a lot harder. Is there anything else you want to add, Wes?
I had one question for you, Bob, and we talked about Sumlin being the former Oklahoma offensive coordinator, Mangino the same way. But would you think the reason for Mangino getting fired had more so to how unattractive he was from a physical standpoint, some of the things he said, but from a football standpoint, he was able to do things at Kansas that not many people have been able to do. That being said, with him having that Oklahoma background, from a pure football standpoint, and you look at Sumlin, a much more attractive option from a physical standpoint, do you think that would actually be in the favor, seeing from a football standpoint what Mangino's been able to do, what Sumlin's been able to do? Maybe Sumlin's just the better version of Mangino, being a more attractive guy physically, more cleaner to the press, but at the same time has that football background of Oklahoma.
That's a really persuasive argument, and a very strong argument on why Kansas should, if they're going to look hard, should be looking at Kevin Sumlin. They have an internal candidate who doesn't look like he's going to get much consideration, despite the fact he's a finalist for a National Coach of the Year award, and that's Ed Warner, their offensive coordinator. It looks like Warner may be headed toward Akron, potentially where he took his master's and has coached before. So it doesn't look like they're going internal here. I'm not sure that Oklahoma thing might not scare off some people in Kansas, but it certainly is a compelling argument to keep doing what you're doing if what you were doing was far more successful than what other people have done in Kansas. And I think that's been the one thing that Mark Mangino suffered from. He was a grumpy guy. Looks like he's been a victim of his own success at Kansas. Well, Wes, it was a pleasure to talk about these two jobs with you. It looks like a couple of schools are almost beating us to the punch, or have taken our punch away from us with Louisville and hiring Charlie Strong. And we realize that Kansas has got some issues to sort out. But it's been a pleasure talking to you again this week. This is Bob Bolin with Wes Bunting talking about the on-campus search for a number of college coaching jobs. And we'll be back with you next week. Thank you very much.